This podcast is a partnership between Money Radio WPSE and the Knox Law Firm. The Knox Law Firm is a full-service law firm that has provided practical solutions to businesses, families, public entities, and nonprofit organizations for over 65 years. Their clients include a wide array of businesses, public entities, and nonprofit organizations, as well as individuals and families. They always strive to understand your needs and fulfill them in a friendly, responsive, and cost-effective manner. Joining us today is Bob Zaruta, an attorney at the Knox Law Firm's Erie office. Bob specializes in labor and employment law, including litigation and workers' compensation. Bob, thanks for being with us today.
Glad to be here.
Bob, your practice focuses on a wide range of labor and employment matters. Could you share some of the most common issues employers face today when it comes to hiring and firing practices?
Sure. You know, the world for employers and HR professionals has drastically changed since the COVID-19 pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, employers were dealing with a worker shortage and struggled to find talented and responsible employees. The pandemic exacerbated the problem, leaving employers with major challenges with recruiting and maintaining enough employees just to keep operations running. From a hiring perspective, this meant that employers were in many ways required to increase wages and benefits. Competition for even average employees was fierce, and there was a lot of poaching going on back and forth between companies, where one company would offer another one $1 more per hour just to make them change companies. From a discipline firing perspective, due to the lack of workers, companies who had poor performing employees or problem employees, like those who are coming in late, not showing up consistently, maybe causing some issues with other employees, they were placed in difficult situations. The employers were, because, you know, the question is, do I fire this employee? Do I discipline this employee? Employees kind of knew that they had leverage and an advantage. And the employer was, well, do I fire them now or do I wait to find a replacement? Because I got to keep my operations running. So this was a situation that was never in effect 10 years ago, but, you know, is a regular thing that employers are facing today.
It certainly makes sense. Bob, I know wage and hour issues can be complex. What are the key areas employers should focus on to ensure compliance with regulations like the FLSA?
Yeah, so the U.S. government recently released new regulations for the FLSA. These regulations address what's called the salary threshold that must be met for an employer to properly classify an employee as what is called an exempt employee. By way of a brief background, the general rule is that employees who work over 40 hours a week are entitled to overtime pay, or 1.5 times their regular rate of pay for any hours or time they work over 40 in a week. However, there are exceptions built into the law for employees who are referred to as white-collar exempt employees. Employees who meet the criteria for a white-collar exemption are not entitled to overtime pay. So rather, the employee receives a salary which does not change regardless of how many hours they work. You'll find this in management a lot. Someone who's a supervisor or manager, you know, while maybe they normally work 40 hours a week, they may work 50 hours a week sometimes, and they don't get overtime, their pay stays the same. So one of the requirements to be considered exempt under the FLSA, and thus not entitled to overtime, is that the employee must receive a minimum salary amount. So prior to July 1 of 2024, the salary threshold amount was around $35,000 a year. That was an amount that had not changed in a long time. With the new regulations, the threshold was increased to its current amount, which is $44,000 a year, but will increase again to almost $59,000 effective January 1, 2025. So these are significant increases, and many employers who previously classified employees as exempt now may not be able to do so unless they increase their salary significantly. And otherwise, the employees will be entitled to overtime if they work over 40 hours in a week. So employers are really faced with challenges of how do we address our previously classified exempt employees who now maybe don't meet that threshold.
Yeah, it certainly sounds like the challenges are formidable today. Bob, you represent both private and public employers. How do the challenges differ between these two sectors when it comes to labor and employment law?
So while many of the laws are applicable to both sectors, public employers often have more built-in protections than private sector employees. For example, private sector employees have First Amendment protections. Private sector employees do not. This is often a misconception. I can't tell you how many times I go to training sessions for private employers and I go over this. I said, you may think I have my First Amendment rights. I can post what I want on Facebook. My employer can't discipline me if they disagree. And that's not necessarily the case. And so I think a lot of private sector employees do not are not aware that they don't have those built-in constitutional protections. Aside from the constitutional protections, public employers are often more likely to have a unionized workforce, which, you know, as you know, brings in a lot of different challenges for the employer.
And Bob, I know you also represent nonprofit organizations. Now, I know they often have budget constraints. How do you serve nonprofits and how can they efficiently engage with legal counsel on labor and employment matters?
Well, I'm very passionate about this. I'm glad you asked that question. I have served on many nonprofit boards before, and I have seen firsthand the struggle they have with complying with laws and avoiding liability on one hand, but then also having to stay within their budget. Many nonprofits will elect not to call a labor and employment attorney to avoid the high hourly rate and essentially cross their fingers and hope for the best. Some other nonprofits rely on, you know, attorneys who may be on their board but are not specialized in that area, which is a problem in itself. So I came up with a solution to this problem a few years ago. For smaller nonprofits, what I do is I offer a subscription model. It's basically a flat monthly rate. Clients have access to me, unlimited access to me for typical day-to-day employee matters. This includes a lot of things such as preparing employee handbooks, company policies, hiring, firing decisions, compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act, preparing contracts, unemployment compensation, just to name a few. My subscription model has been very well received as it allows nonprofits to get the advice they need and protect their organization from liability without having to worry about being on the clock and paying that, you know, high hourly rate.
Yeah, I can certainly see how that would be valuable for nonprofit organizations. Bob, I also did in researching for this interview that you were also involved in collective bargaining and union contract negotiations. I understand there's significant aspects of your work and what you do. What strategies do you recommend for employers to successfully navigate these negotiations?
Well, preparation is key. Employers should speak to all management level employees and obtain input from them prior to making their proposals. A lot of times there are things that people at the top are not aware of that maybe some of the lower level supervisors are. So it's very important to get that information and have that before you actually make a proposal, because, you know, these contracts can be up to, you know, 3, 5, 7 year contracts, and you got to live with them. And so if you miss out something, your next opportunity to remedy that is not going to be until far into the future. In addition to that, I'll say, this is what I encourage all my clients to do, is think about the future. Don't just think about, you know, the next 1 or 2 years, what's important now. Take the time to think about what's going to happen over the life of this contract. You may not be able to predict everything, but if you're thinking that way, you may be able to hit on some things that maybe you'd miss if you weren't thinking about them.
We're speaking with Bob Zaruta, an attorney at the Knox Law Firm's Erie office. Bob, let's turn our attention to sexual harassment training. Now, I know that's become a key focus for many organizations. What best practices do you recommend for creating a workplace that's both safe and compliant with legal requirements?
Well, regular sexual harassment training is very important. I recommend this training once every 12 to 18 months. This training covers not just what constitutes sexual harassment, but also, which is really important, how to report it. A lot of times people will have complaints and they won't know how to report it. Or maybe the person they're supposed to report it to is the person who's doing the harassing and they don't know who to report it to. So it's very important to have a detailed reporting policy that makes very clear who to report to, even when there's a conflict of interest. Who do I report to? In addition to that, and I think this is just as important, is I recommend that supervisors and management receive training on processing and investigating sexual harassment complaints. This is very important. I think a lot of times when I'm seeing some lawsuits that either my clients lose lawsuits or they end up paying money for settlement is because they kind of botched some area of the investigation, and a small little fix at that point could have prevented that problem from happening.
And Bob, you've represented employers in various courts and before agencies like the EEOC and NLRB. What are some of the most significant challenges employers face when defending themselves against discrimination or unfair labor practices claims?
So court cases are won well before you're in court. I will often tell my clients it's very important to create your narrative and have your documentation in place prior to handing me the case, right? If I get the case and you say, we were sued, we have a charge against us, here, defend us, I can't change those facts. I can't change that documentation. I can't change the evidence. So I can't go back in time. So it's very important from the start to make sure your documentation is in order and it supports our own narrative. I've seen a lot of allegations that have been made that have no truth behind them, no merit to them, but it ends up being he said versus she said. And you don't want to be in that position because you could very well lose or at least put yourself in a bad position that could have been avoided just by proper documentation.
Bob, let's talk for a moment about independent contractors. How can employers ensure they are correctly classifying workers and avoiding potential legal pitfalls?
So there are many misunderstandings about independent contractors. A lot of people think that you can just call somebody an independent contractor, have a contract that says they're an independent contractor, and that they are one. Well, that's not true. So while agreements are recommended and they could help you, the reality is when government agencies are looking to determine if this is truly an independent contractor, they're going to look to the reality of the situation and not what is set forth in a job description or an independent contractor agreement. So it's really important to make sure that the reality of what the contractor does is consistent with the agreement, and also that what they do is something where the employer doesn't have too much control over. Because if the employer has too much control over the situation, telling them what time they have to show up, telling them where they have to work, telling them how to do something, it's very likely that the government, if they look at that, are going to say, this is an employee, this is not an independent contractor. And the potential liability there can be huge, because if you classify somebody as an independent contractor, that means you are not making contributions to their unemployment compensation. You are not covering them for workers' compensation perspective. You are not paying them overtime for hours worked over 40. If someone who works for you is determined to be an employee later on and you classify them as independent contractor, you may have to pay back workers' comp, back unemployment compensation, and may be liable for any hours they worked over 40 by paying them overtime. So it can be very costly. So it's very important to, if you're not sure if somebody is truly classified or properly classified as an independent contractor, to have a labor and employment attorney kind of review the situation and to make sure you're on the right path.
Bob, today you've given employers a lot to think about, to say the least. But before we depart, one final question. What trends do you see emerging in labor and employment law? How should employers prepare for these changes in the coming years?
The labor force is going to continue to shrink. There's nothing we can really do about that. It's just there's fewer people. There's few people who want to work as much. So we have to adapt and really start thinking about the future. And I think employers should be thinking about their 5 and 10 year plans. They should be considering how, if at all, AI can be used. Basically, how you could best meet your operational goals with fewer employees. I think thinking about the future and thinking, you know, how many employers are we likely to have? If we're not going to have enough based on how we operate now, how can we change our operations so that we can still be successful with fewer employees? And I think those are the things that if you think about those and you're prepared for those, you'll be ahead of the curve.
Thanks to our guest today, Bob Zaruda, an attorney at the Knox Law Firm's Erie office. Once again, Bob specializes in labor and employment law, litigation, and workers' compensation. If you have questions for Bob, he can be reached at the Knox Law Firm's Erie office, 814-459-2800. Once again, that's 814-459-2800. Join us next month for another podcast featuring a guest from the Knox Law Firm. Knox Law has offices in Erie, Pittsburgh, and Jamestown, New York. This podcast has been a collaboration between Money Radio WPSE and the Knox Law Firm. Learn more at kmgslaw.com. That's kmgslaw.com.